Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He had a very weak ego, in fact, that led to a need for power and underpinned his sadistic streak.
For the very first time, the greatest minds in criminology have come together to dissect the psyches of some of the world's most prolific serial killers. These forensic psychiatrists, psychologists, and pathologists have an incredible depth of knowledge and often first-hand insight into these killers, helping us to understand what makes a monster. The following interview with Dr. Julian Boone was recorded in July 2019 for Crime and Investigations TV series Making a Monster. Dr. Boone is a chartered forensic psychologist and senior lecturer in forensic psychology at the University of Leicester. Involved in a professional profiling capacity in assisting police forces around the world for over 20 years, Dr. Boone's offender profiling techniques served as the inspiration for ITV's Wire in the Blood. Caution, the subject matter of this interview contains graphic descriptions and is often very disturbing.
It used to be said you can always tell when a prisoner's lying to you if you just look and see if their lips are moving. Now, I think that's a little bit harsh, and we know that some prisoners will be very, very honest, and I can think of some that have been, but most try, for obvious reasons, to put a good gloss on it. And therein lies the problem with the treatment programs, which are rife in prisons, because they know what they've got to say in order to get the little certificate. And that requires a great deal of experience to say, look, I will know if you're going to be giving me the runaround. And if that happens, the only person who's going to be suffering in terms of how the report is presented will be you. So let's get it straight. You tell me the truth and you will be doing yourself a favour. And you have to have the chutzpah, the balls, or whatever the phrase is, to be able to go straight for that and not take any nonsense, but at the same time establish rapport. So you also have to be extremely aware about differences in background between the offenders and yourself. Now, it may have occurred to you that I have a public school accent, and trust me, that's because I went to a public school. Now, I'm not going to change that and try and adjust and be false, but I make that clear. Don't let that put you off. You may think I'm a public school twit, but I'm telling you, you've been making a mistake. Just answer the questions I'm giving you and give me the information I want. In the early days, police officers would frankly ring you up and say, look, we've got this case. How do you think we're dealing with in terms of an offender? And then you'd go to the police station, and then you'd hear things through the wall. This goes back decades, we're talking about. You hear things through the wall. Look, while we've got the shrink here, let's ask him about the rape that went down last Friday. And then it snowballs very quickly. In those days, the National Crime Faculty decided that all this had to be regulated because there were all sorts of odds and sods coming out of the woodwork, offering their services. Everybody from right down to Madame Rosa on the end of the pier with her crystal ball. So it had to be regulated, and then there was a formal list of those who were deemed appropriate to be on it. It's changed in the name over the years. Now, if you're called on by the police, you get a telephone call. What is your availability? We have this situation, and the senior investigating officer would like some assistance in trying to understand what's going on. And these are not cases of minor cases. They tend to be ones which very obviously require a psychological understanding to be there. And that could not stress more importantly that in my case, at any rate, there is no I know better than you. The senior investigating officers are incredibly well-trained and intelligent. So it's really coming from two separate angles, the psychological side, or the forensic psychological side, and also the officer's experience. And there's one caveat I always add, and that is, look, if you don't like what I am saying, don't think I'm going to be offended. You go with your waters on the thing. But also, if you've got any questions as to how I come to these conclusions, then I'm more than happy to talk it through. And that leads to discussion and sometimes very successful results.
Levi Belfield was found guilty of the murders of Marcia McDonnell and Amélie Delagrange, and the attempted murder of Kate Sheedy in February 2008. 3 years later, in June 2011, Belfield would also be found guilty for the murder of Millie Dowler, who had gone missing in March 2002. Having watched recordings of Belfield being interviewed, Dr. Boone gives his assessment on the serial killer.
Intensely irritating from an interviewer's point of view, because he would hide behind the skirts of the duty solicitors who would advise him he's probably best to say nothing. And he would, with a particularly effeminate voice, say, look at the solicitor to the right, and then look at the police and say, I'd like to help you, but I'm being advised here that I mustn't say anything. All of which is a load of codswallop, because he could have helped if he'd wanted to. And so he very monotonously would just go, no comment, no comment, no, or more like, no comment, no comment, no comment, over and over again, to the point where you believed that he wasn't even listening to the questions that were being put to him. And once or twice, or maybe three or four times actually, but this would be over a period of hours, he would suddenly react to something, usually related to him personally, and you could see a trace of anger in his eye or contempt towards the officers doing the interviewing, which was interesting in itself. So even with no comment interviews, one can learn things about the individuals being interviewed. There is no doubt at all that, in my view, that far from having a very strong ego, one that he'd like to present to the world around him, saying he liked fine wines and classical music when the reality was more like Radio One and high-octane lager. He had a very weak ego, in fact, and the bluster to put over the surface, pretending to be sophisticated when he clearly wasn't and comes from very humble roots. As a consequence, I think that led to a need for power and control, and underpinned his sadistic streak. but it was totally enmeshed with psychopathy, so that he was very adept and clever at chatting up young girls, and he had a particular preference for blondes with large breasts, and he would chat them up, and within as little as 2 to 3 days, have them scared for their lives. And when anybody who slighted him, he was particularly strong on being slighted. So somebody said, go away, I don't want to go out with you. You really were taking your life in your hands as a girl. It has even been said that if one girl who was one of his victims, she crossed the road to get away from him because he was cruising and asking to talk to her. And it was that caused him to run her over, then run back over her, and then run forwards again, leaving her with multiple injuries. And miraculously, she survived and was able to give some form of evidence, which itself was traumatic for her. What was telling was immediately after that shocking incident, he went off on a power trip, driving off very high speed, going through red lights and things like this, all of which is highly indicative of what's known as power assertive behaviour. And people who have a need for power assertive behaviour have a need for power and to express it. And why do they have that need? Because underneath it all, they have a deep sense of inferiority. I think rejection by the opposite sex was something he wouldn't tolerate. The great Levi Belfield, he's telling himself this. Nobody else is telling him, which is why he has to say it. How dare she not automatically fall at my knees so that within a space of 2 or 3 days I can have her completely terrified. His pattern was to take their telephones and give them another one which only had his number on and say to them, well, this is all you need, i.e. cutting them off completely from any other thing. And on one notorious occasion, he told one girl who'd cheesed him off for whatever reason, that she was to spend the night on a stool in the kitchen and she mustn't move from there. This is when he went off to bed. So she was so scared, she stayed there all night. And when the police asked about toileting and that sort of thing, she said, well, I had no option. I just had to go on the stool and I couldn't move. Now, that's how terrifying. But having started being so charming, so lovely, so in answer to your next question, premeditated is very much there, but also opportunistic. So if he saw, as he did with the French student, a girl walking through the parkland, he just saw her and went after her. Likewise with Millie Dowler, she just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I believe the police have a number of other cases that they can't absolve him from. But I very much doubt he'll get out. But at least I hope not. Being a nightclub bouncer really fits well with Levi Belfield. It fits his opportunity to meet and find women. It means his ability to be the big shot. But he also had a moderately successful part in a wheel clamping business. And he would find it funny and amusing to clamp people. And in those days, at any rate, you could have very high fines to get your clamp removed. And he once did it to an elderly male pensioner. And he boasted about it afterwards, how he didn't care and that he was going to do it. So you can see there's absolutely zero compassion for anybody else. I think his principal tenets of his MO were to target his target group, which in his case, on his own statement, is blonde and busty girls, and to start off very nice to them, unless they had rejected him, in which case he could switch. And this was noted by the police, that he could turn on a sixpence from being nicey-nicey and best-matey through to being really malicious in a very short space of time. So if they don't reject him and listen to his charming words, then gradually the screw is turned so that he takes complete control over them, and so the sadism begins. The other thing is, he was supposed, after one of his victims, to have been assessed for depression and said to one of his friends, you don't know what I've done. Now, that is pure form power assertive, in that it's not enough that they know it, that they've done something. They have to share it with others so that they can be a big shot. And to let everybody else know. And so I believe that on one occasion he attacked a lady at a bus stop with a hammer and said to his friends, stop the car, got up, whacked her, very serious injuries, and then got back in and said, now you can see the sort of man I am. I haven't seen either his mother in his company or anything like that. But the reports are that there was a really very close relationship between the two, unusually close. And one officer regarded it as, quote, troubling, the closeness in that relationship. But they will have seen the two together. I have not. I do believe he would have continued if he hadn't been caught. And as I say, I think there's plenty of scope for linking him to other crimes which have been unsolved. The problem being getting the evidence for it. The magic bit with solving the Millie D'Alamo murder was that the police went to all the places where he'd stayed, and on the very day she went missing, and from the very location she went missing, he had left a property and disposed of a bed, etc., etc. That was the vital clue that led to him. And sometimes he wouldn't appear in court because he said, the press have not been fair to me. I see. Sometimes I left speechless.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The fact that he tried to sully the name of Millie's parents is a delight which can only be regarded as sadistic. And it gives him power and makes strings it out. So some people have said that a sadist stops being sadistic when someone's dead. And of course that's true. But there's further ways of extending the sadism by putting it out to the family. So Ian Brady would be a case in point, refusing to give the location of one of his key victims, and his mother had to die, never knowing where her son was buried on the moors. And Brady knew damn well where that was, but he just was not going to give it because it's his bone, you see, he doesn't want to. And he gets the continuous feed of sadistic delight by knowing that his mother's going to be. So even after Keith Bennett had died, being killed, he can get a vicarious thrill through the family. I do think that when it's purely settled in, and he's realised that he must know it, that he can't get out now, he'll be in forever, he might decide to be, quote, helpful in confessing to other murders which are as yet unsolved. And that won't be because he wants to be helpful in a citizen's sense, it's be that he wants to be in the spotlight, the limelight, because at the moment he's just another old con. Yes, he can live off the notoriety of his heinous crimes, but at the same time he wants to keep it going and may just now and again come up and say, well, you don't know what I did with that particular victim, and so then has all the police rushing around trying to get him to talk, and we go through the whole usual farce all over again. So I think that's what he would do in jail, but I very much doubt he'd talk to me.
Dr. Boone has had a varied and well-travelled career, which has seen him assisting in a variety of police forces, utilising his technique for offender profiling. From his experience, how accurate are profiling databases, and what conclusions can you pull from the profile obtained?
We know that 20% of, well, the best estimate we have is 20% of antisocial personality behaviour is attributable to genetic forces. And therefore we've got a whopping great 80% that comes from it, which is environmental. So if we bring those things together and the environment is very favourable and it's not likely to activate the genetic components, then that will lead to an attenuation of serial killing likelihood. The difficulty we have is that there sometimes and oftentimes their siblings don't, who've had exactly the same experiences, don't go on to do this. So there has to be something within their personality that causes them to act out more than others. We're right back to where we started. You have to look at the individual and, of course, the circumstances and the antecedents, bring it all together for a proper assessment, and only then will you have any clarity about risk. I have an American profiling colleague who says the best treatment for people like Levi is 10 cents of lead, as in shoot him. But we don't do that sort of thing in Great Britain. But if you're going to tell me that Belfield is going to be usefully rehabilitated with victim awareness schemes, sex offender treatment programs and the like. I think you have a greater degree of optimism than I.
Coming up next, Making a Monster the Tapes has another two-parter with Dr. Richard Badcock, discussing Scottish serial killer Robert Black and a career as a clinical psychiatrist. Alongside this podcast, you can also watch crime and investigations TV show Making a Monster, with new episodes every Monday at 9 p.m. So far, we've had episodes featuring Rose West and Robert Maudsley, with many more to come. What are your thoughts on this episode? Leave us a note in the review on your podcast app or get in touch on social media. Just tag it with @makingamonster or search for @crimeandinvestigation. You can also head to crimeandinvestigation.co.uk for more information on the series and profiles on all the killers featured. Making a Monster the Tapes features interviews recorded by Monster Films for the Crime and Investigation TV series and was voiced by me, Cherry Healy, produced by Sam Pearson and Chloe Frost, with editing by Joel Porter.
History's Letters of Love in World War II reveals a remarkable account of the Second World War through a series of real-life love letters.
Featuring interviews with their family and starring me, Johnny Pitts,
and me, Amy Nuttall. This 8-part podcast series tells the brave, tenacious and touching story of Cyril and Olga's war.
We found a place to park our tanks, climbed out, just going to start a fire to make a meal when, phew, bang, phew, bang. One shell dropped about 20 yards one side of the tank, another about the same the other side.
I'm dreaming of those 3 happy months we spent together at home. How quickly they flew. It'll be like a second honeymoon when we start that life again.
The locals came out in canoes to try and sell fruit, baskets, sandals, etc. How my mouth watered when I saw the piles of bananas, mangoes, oranges, pineapples. I haven't had any fresh fruit since I left home.
A sad note crept into your letter from Port of Call when you described the rough sea. And you said for a moment you thought you saw a glimpse of the Peakland Hills with limestone walls. You were gliding down towards Taddington on a misty April morning. Then suddenly it was the green sea with its white veins and the village was lost in the trough of a wave. It must have been a lovely little dream, and you described it so beautifully.
Download Letters of Love in World War II on iTunes, Acast or your favourite podcast app.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.